over there, in my bag, there's a Pokeball. Get it and help me.
These Pokeballs over here? Whoa, I've never seen these before. I'm a new Pokemon trainer, so yeah. Is this gonna be my first Pokemon? Is this like a really important decision that I have to make? Here, let's see them. Whoa, it's like a little bird! Aw, so cute! What's this one? Aw, this one's awesome! He's like a little fish or something, with legs. Aw, man, I can't decide! Oh my gosh. Oh wait, there's another one? Oh, it's like a gecko or something. Nice. Oh, man. I don't even know how I'm going to choose. Oh, man. This is so cool. Do they evolve? There's like 3 evolutions, right? Oh, what are they going to look like? I want to choose the coolest one and the most strongest. These guys have mega evolutions, right? I don't care which one you pick, just help me! Okay, jeez, sorry. Come on, Torchic, let's go. Wait, you need my help to defeat a level 2 Poochyena? It's level 2, just kick it or something. Alright, Mudkip, I choose you! Mudkip! Alright, Torchic, let's use Scratch. Torchic!
1 eternity later.
Alright, Torchic. We're almost there. One more scratch should do it. Oh, come on! Draco, use Absorb!
Draco!
You barely did any damage. What did that even absorb? Self-confidence? Poochyena, use Growl! Zigzagoon, use Growl! Wingull can learn Growl? Go ahead, Wingull, use Growl! Good job. To victory! Sneaky advertisements. You all know what I'm talking about. It's when those companies try to get away with selling crappy products by sneaking around details and drawing you in with good deals. There's countless products out there that companies make seem super amazing on the ads or in the commercials, and then you buy it and it's complete crap. So here's some tips, companies, on whether you should sell your products or not, because we, the consumers, are very sick and tired of your sneaky little plans and stuff. If you have to hide something about your product, don't sell it. Okay, how do we say this product will completely blind you if you get it in your eyes? How about we just say that? Blindness is pretty serious and we don't want anyone getting hurt. But we can't have people looking at the bottle and seeing that they could get blinded and get scared and not buy it. Jeremy, how about we write, "Do not let come in contact with face." But that makes it seem not as serious. Exactly. Jeremy, make the print really small and put it at the back and the bottom of the product. If you have to hire actors or write a script for the people on what to say about your product, don't sell it. Okay, so what you're gonna say is, "I love this product. It saved me countless hours of work. But I haven't even used the product before. How do I know if it does?" Just say it and we'll pay you lots of money, okay? Don't try to make things seem better by making all the warnings all proper. So you're saying that if someone were to drink this, the product would slowly break down their stomach wall, causing the stomach acid to digest itself, resulting in serious injuries and maybe even death in a matter of days. Yes, that's correct. Not for consumption. If you have to woo people into buying your product with gifts, don't sell it. Special offer! If you buy the self-heating coffee mug, you'll also get a second one, free! Also, if you pay shipping and handling, you get 5 free packs of coffee beans of your choice to go with your amazing new mug. And there's also a limited time offer for a really neat spoon for your coffee mixing. But wait! If you act now, you get a very exclusive mystery prize! Order your self-heating coffee mug today! If you're selling a medicine and the side effects are worse than the actual problem, don't sell your product. Side effects may include sneezing, itchy or irritated eyes, runny nose, dizziness, sore throat, depression, suicidal thoughts or actions, vomiting, some forms of cancer, and memory loss. Some deaths have also been reported. That sounds like a lot of side effects for just curing allergies. Yes, but it's worth it. But most of the side effects include what allergies actually are, like sneezing, itchy or irritated eyes, runny nose, and sore throat. It's basically like you're paying money for allergies. Yes, but it's worth it! I promised you a flirting animation in the last video, so here you go. Big shocker! I don't like it. I'm assuming you all guessed based on my personality that I'm not one to partake in swooning someone over with charming words of flattery. I don't think I've ever flirted in my entire life, come to think of it. Okay, well, I did this one time by accident, but I'll get to that later on. I'm more of a make someone feel good and just overall let them know I care about them kind of person. I have no courage to do anything else. All I can imagine is me just trying to approach someone being like, "Hey there. I have a girlfriend." Oh my god, same! We have so much in common! Ah, oof. And even if I somehow got past the initial flirty introduction, my low small talk skills won't get me very far with anything anyway. Okay, so the first time I ever tried to be a confident, flirty person, or whatever, was with this one friend I had. I liked them at the time, and we hung out a lot. And one time we were just sitting on their bed, just chilling and talking. Just buds being buds. And my mind just starts going, okay, you've never done anything close to flirty in your entire life. Who even are you? Get your crap together. Just do something. Let's go. Jeez, come on. I basically bullied myself into submission, which I didn't even know was possible, but congrats to me, I guess. I peer pressured myself without any peers. So we were just talking, and I just wrapped my arm around them, like with no warning. They were like mid-sentence, and I just like, eh. And I immediately regretted it. Like, okay, no, this is not what I want anymore. Why'd I convince myself to do this? God dang it! Cutting the story short, we just remained friends, and honestly, I'm glad we did. I realized I prefer this person much more as a friend, and I'm glad we didn't start a relationship. If anything, we just became closer as pals. They're literally one of my best friends now. They also watch my videos, so... hey. You're probably expecting me to say this is awkward. But you're wrong! We're best friends! Sorry you can't laugh at my self-deprecation this time! Ha! Just a side tangent. I don't understand why people just stop talking to someone just because they don't share mutual feelings with them. Like, okay, so you like someone enough to possibly consider starting a closer relationship, which means you already enjoy their company, personality, and overall them as a person. And just because they don't share the same romantic feelings back, you all of a sudden don't want to associate with them anymore? That makes absolutely no sense. Minus the relationship, you two sound like you could have a freaking bomb friendship, since you theoretically should be able to get along perfectly. I mean, if you consider them as an adequate possible partner. I don't know, it just doesn't make sense to me. Unless you're a douchebag and you only like that person for their looks and nothing else. Another part to flirting is the texting, the messaging, the sliding in the DMsing. And I don't really do that either, but I have something to say about it. So I guess I understand why you would want to wait a few minutes to text someone back because you don't want to seem clingy or something. But why do people wait, like, more than 10 minutes? That's such a waste of time! And it kind of comes off that you don't really care that you're talking to them, which is the opposite of what you're feeling. Why can't we show when we appreciate someone anymore? Also, I know people who want to text someone they like as little as possible because, I don't know, again, it makes it seem like they don't want to be texting them or something. They'll almost make it a competition to try and leave the conversation first. Like, congrats! You went on finding a way to make them be the last to text in your conversation! You know what your prize is? Not getting to talk to the person you want to talk to.
Putting it that way doesn't make it seem all that appealing, does it? So now I'm sure you're wanting me to tell you stories that make me kind of die a bit inside, but provide you with entertainment. And you're right! Let's start with awkward first date, shall we? During my junior year of high school after our homecoming dance, my group of friends and I wanted to go bowling because... fun. I didn't have a date, obviously. At the bowling place next to our lane were a group of people around the same age as us, and out of the blue, one of my friends just goes, "Hey, will you guys take a picture with us so it looks like we have dates?" Rachel! So we took pictures with these random people, and the one that was my date was like, "Huh, you should send that to me." And me being freaking innocent and clueless just goes, "Okay. Wait, I don't have your number." Wait, did I just... how did I do that? So blah blah blah, I had this person's number now, and I was like, "Oh yeah, I totally meant to be all smooth like that to my friends." But in reality,
technically, nah.
I have no idea what I'm doing. They end up asking me to the movies, and I was like, okay. But my parents didn't want me to go alone, so they made me invite Kate and her boyfriend at the time to go as a double date. So we all go to the movies, and since I literally don't know anything about this person, we didn't know what to talk about. The whole time. It was all just flop conversations like, "So how was your day?" "Good. How about you?" "Good." "What's your favorite color?" It was scarring. Like, I'm serious. I will never accept any movie invitations unless it's with close friends or family. Ever. All that comes to my mind when I think of movie theaters are just flashbacks. Like, I don't want to relive that. I already lived through it once. That's quite enough. No more, please. So that story wasn't too bad, just awkward tension. Come on, let's bump it up a bit. Awkward first kiss. So, hey, my first date was with someone I literally didn't know. You think I'd learn my lesson and would kind of get to know someone before I accepted date invitations, right? Wrong. Hint, I'm bad at saying no to people. Also, this was my second date ever. Just putting that fact out there. During my freshman year in college, this person invited me to go on a date, and yeah, I didn't know them either. Like, at all. I've learned my lesson now, okay? We meet up and decide to eat at a restaurant, and heyo, I'll save some time just by saying it was going very similar to my first date. Exposition time. My college has this mountain near it called A Mountain, and people like to hike it. Well, it's really not even a hike, more like... walking up at a mild angle. So we wind up walking up A Mountain and sitting on a rock platform at the top, and we continue attempting at a normal conversation, not really succeeding. At one point, they put their arm around me. Come to think of it, all these stories are kind of coming full circle, and I never realized, and I'm kind of freaking out. And I kind of start panicking to myself. Okay, see where this is going, but I don't know if I want to end up kissing them. Like, I literally know nothing about this person, again, and I haven't kissed anyone yet. What is even happening right now? Oh, golly, jeez. And all of a sudden, they grab my face and turn it towards them, and I'm going, I see what's about to happen, but crap, I don't know if I want to kiss them yet. I ran out of time. So anyone who just happens to take a date up to the top of A Mountain and sit on the platform, you'll be sitting in the same spot I accidentally got kissed by someone. And if you're there, take a picture and tweet it at me. I'd say preferably of you guys kissing, but that's kind of weird. I mean, unless you want to. This last story isn't really about flirting or dates, but I think it's kind of funny. I was hanging out with an ex-friend, and we were walking along our college's main strip. It's a street called Mill, and it's got a bunch of stores and restaurants along it. And just because I like how all these stories are kind of connecting, the restaurant First Kiss and I went to was on this strip, too. We sat down at a bench outside a shop, and these two passerbys go, "Aw, relationship goals," as they walk into the shop. We kind of looked at each other and laughed, and just kept talking. Then, a few minutes later, the same people left the store and walked by us again, and were like, "So how long have you guys been together?" And we were like, we froze. And after a bit, I just go, "He's gay." Their faces were like, "We made a mistake." So, moral of the video, don't overthink relationship stuff or dates or kissing or whatever you're overthinking. If you like someone, tell them. If you want to date someone, ask them. If you want to kiss someone, give them more thinking time before you yank their head at your face. Just be cool about it all. If you can't be a couple, then show the world how bomb you guys are as friends. Also, super secret special announcement. I'm gonna try and whip up a video explaining this a bit more, but basically, there's been a revamp to the shop. A bunch of new merch stuff, but more importantly, plushes. Yep, there's Jaden plushes just awaiting your purchase now. More details in the official announcement video. But if you're still here, that means you have early access to the new Jaden merch. I highly suggest you go check that stuff out, especially since everything's on sale for a limited time right now. What? Anyway, new shop, go peep it out, and yeah. Jaden out.
I'm sure a lot of you guys have heard of a website called thesaurus.com. It's pretty much the go-to website when you need to write a paper or you have to sound super sophisticated but you don't know how to. You can't just write like normal people talk in day-to-day life. Are you crazy? Do you want people to think you're stupid or something? Use fancy words like baffling and henceforth and obsequious. Obsequious. I'm getting off track already. But why do you teachers want us to write things in a way that most people don't speak? Makes much more sense to write a paper in the words you would use instead of someone in the 1800s. If I want to say penguins live in the cold, I want to be able to say penguins live in the cold. I shouldn't have to go out of my way to change it. Penguins, one of the few flightless birds on this planet Earth, live in an uncommon environment compared to other animal species and avians. They can be found wandering the icy barren land of Antarctica and other extreme cold climates. I got the same exact point across in both paragraphs, but one took me 6 seconds to write, and the other took me 8 minutes, plus miserable points. No joke, I sat there at my computer for like a solid 3 minutes, just staring at my script like,
I really don't want to do this right now.
Why is this a thing? Why do people expect this from people? The teacher doesn't even talk like this. If anything, it just wastes everyone's time, and it still turned out like crap. Like, really? Icy barren land of Antarctica? What? The only other scenario I can think of that actually uses language like this are those super dramatic animal documentaries.
Faster than a cheetah. More muscle-bound than a gorilla. More agile than a great white shark. Swooping overhead. Feasting on our streets. The pigeon. An evolutionary masterpiece hiding in plain sight. Powerful champions of the air with superhuman senses. Learning. Remembering.
Think of the time you could save if we could just write our complete opinions on essays without sounding like we crappily plagiarized Shakespeare. We could be a lot more productive as a society. Just kidding, we'd all still look at memes on the internet. But think about how many more memes you could look through just by saving that much time writing essays. Take note, teachers. I know you don't like reading through all our hogwash either. Do it for the memes. Anyway, so you gotta write something important, and you gotta sound smarter than you actually are. Let's be honest, 80% of our generation talks like,
Hey, LMAO!
It's lit, fam!
Lol.
Cringe!
I'm dead.
I'm sorry. So what do? Thesaurus.com, baby. Why would you use the word said when you can write aforementioned? Why walk somewhere when you can perambulate? Who thinks anymore? I intellectualize. It doesn't matter if you can pronounce the word. It's all about the aesthetic of it. Look at these beauties. They're what's gonna get you that A- on that essay, not these lackadaisical words that normal people use. Shoo, get out of here. It also works with resumes. At least I think so. I haven't written one before. You have to sound way more qualified than all these other lamos. You're the one who's been gainfully employed at one of the top 10 food chains in the United States and have manufactured and specialized in the serving occupation for half a year before discontinuing the position. See? That sounds way better than saying that you worked at Applebee's for 6 months before being fired. I got a good starting word for all you folks out there looking to impress people with big words. Equanimity. Yeah, toss that one into a conversation and just watch the people gawk at your knowledge. Hey, that Colin's got some pretty good equanimity going on over there. He'll probably do good on the test tomorrow. I do have one question for the internet. How many of you sneaky little beans use the website for work and studious things? I didn't even use the website for that one. Ha! And how many of you use it for writing fan fictions? I really want to know. Do you wonder this? I wonder this. Do more students use it, or do more fangirls use it? I'm not saying I read fanfiction, but I know enough about the internet to understand that there are people out there who can get pretty expressive with their fanfiction stories. Like, yeah. Thesaurus.com people. Is there a way to, like, track, I don't know, the percentage of users who look up average words and the percent who look up more questionable ones that are more passionate, smirking, ravenous, eyes widen, grinned seductive. I'm stopping there. So, let's conclude the video by revamping some common boring phrases with the help of thesaurus.com. Actions speak louder than words. Hoopla blabs more rambunctious than discussion. Best thing since sliced bread. The most superlative instrument from the time of hacked nourishment. Don't cry over spilled milk. Disallowance to mourning over scattered liquid produced by mammals. You can also replace liquid produced by mammals with moo juice. How are you today? To what degree come about your mood here and now? Okay, that would be great. Acceptance, the one in question, would prevail out of this world. Would you like to hang out? Do you authorize conduction of our own selves constituting a gathering appointment? Of course. Indubitably. Feel free to use any of these phrases in your life whenever you want. It's my treat to you. Tweet at me if they help you make new friends or if I get you a job. You're welcome in advance. Also, when I was searching for phrases to thesaurus.com eyes, I googled most popular English phrases, and apparently I don't say about 300 kilometers as much as everyone else does. But Amy is John's girlfriend. I ship it. They can be found wandering the icy barren. The icy barren. We could be a lot more productive as a society. Oh God. We could be a lot more productive as a society. Oh God. We could be a lot more productive as a society. I do have one question for the internet. That was not the question. Or do more fangirls use it? Why is this so hard to say? Or do more fangirls? Ow! Actions speak louder. Ugh, it's the double S's again. Hoopla blabs more rum. This is so stupid. I can't do this.
When it comes to the spirit world, supernatural, chakras, I'm indifferent. Normally, I just don't mess with any of it. Whether it's real or not, I'm sure not gonna fool around and find out. I'm here to live as normal a life I can, die, and then we can go from there. But I got curious. What would happen if I individually booked readings with a bunch of psychics? I mean, I don't even know what they do. I just know something about them being made of crystals and having three eyes or something. It's a world I've never explored before. Until today. I didn't even know what to expect. Would they all say the same thing? Different things? Would they say I'm cursed and demand to put a ritual on me? Who knows? I booked a reading with 5 different psychics. Let's see what they all said about me. I wanted to keep as much consistency in all of this as possible. You know, scientific method and all that. So I specifically booked a tarot card reading and palm reading from all 5 of them. That way they're all reading the same things for me and we get to be good little scientists in the supernatural community. Anyway, psychic one. I walked into the shop and saw a table with a bunch of candles and crystals on it. You know, the typical psychic stuff. Now, I've never gone to a psychic at this point. I didn't know what they were gonna do to me. Were they gonna say my name and say they've been expecting me? And for all I know, a real-life wizard could walk through the door and speak in riddles to me the whole time. But psychic one was a 5-foot-tall middle-aged white lady in a black spaghetti-strap tank top and a ponytail. All the psychics had a bit of a different method of doing the tarot card reading, but the overall gist is they had me put my right hand over the stack of cards, say my full name, then I pulled 18 cards that would determine my reading. Psychic one pulled the cards herself, though. I didn't get to pick them, so I don't know if that was a non-regulation move or all the other psychics let me pick my cards. I'm just saying. She started with what she read about me as a person. I'm my own boss and don't like being told what to do, which is like half true. Well, being my own boss is full true. Hi guys. In normal day-to-day life, I love having someone else tell me what to do. It's just nice to turn my brain off and put someone else behind the wheel. But with YouTube, it's true. I don't like being told what to do. With the Pokemon XD video, I was asking Jacob what I should do with the thumbnail, and he said I shouldn't have Shadow Lugia in it because it's not that eye-catching. And I was like, no, I'm putting Shadow Lugia in the thumbnail because I love Shadow Lugia. And then I did. So the psychic's pretty on point so far. She said I don't like asking people for things. Everything I have, I worked to gain with my own 2 hands. I'm gonna live a long and healthy life beyond my 80s. And I'm gonna have 3 kids. All of those things are pretty fair. I do think you could say that to the majority of people, though. Even if it's not genuinely true to their personality, I think most people like to believe that's the type of person they are. And if I don't live to be 80, what am I gonna do? Sewer? But that's the very strong skeptic in me talking. She do know me for for real, for real. Then she asked if I had any questions for her, and I told her that I constantly worry that my birds are gonna die in some freak accident or sudden disease, or they get out and fly away never to be seen again. She pulled more cards and said she sees that they're safe, but would recommend placing a spiritual protection over them. Which was very interesting to hear. From what she explained, I'd be doing a 3-day, 3-night meditation for them to create a spiritual barrier that can protect them physically, mentally, and medically. Promising medical protection is a big deal. You can't just throw that around lightly, might I just say. And to perform the meditation, I would need to buy the materials from her to do it. She was very big on making sure I knew I wasn't paying for her time, just the materials. Which, how thoughtful. Until she dropped the materials would cost $427. Let's just do a quick rundown on this whole session so we're all up to speed. During this psychic reading, this lady learned I'm my own boss, am successful enough to run my own animation team, care very deeply about my birds, enough to pay a psychic $90 to ask about their safety, and all I have to do to fully protect them from basically anything and everything in this world is set up this spiritual protection for the low price of $427. I didn't know you could repel cancer for under 500 bucks. Someone distract the government. I think we're onto something here. I just told her I don't have the money for it right now. A lie she most definitely didn't believe at that point, but I had to say something to stop this snowball in its tracks. And immediately she said, "That's fine, but this isn't something you should wait a long time on. Thank you, we'll be in touch." I never went back. For that being my first psychic reading experience, it spawned so many questions, but it did answer one I had beforehand, which was, how do psychics even stay in business? Because I am now starting to understand the business model going on here. Moving on to psychic 2, I'll say this right now, this one was my favorite. She was really nice and we had a lot of good small talk. Her psychic reading room was a little closet in her house, and by the end of the session it was very warm in there, but I had a nice time. Same situation, got a tarot card and palm reading. I think she said she gave me a general spiritual reading as well, and this all cost 90 bucks just like the last one. What she said was all very positive. She said she sees me making a name for myself in whatever industry I'm in. That was genuinely the first thing she said to me. I didn't tell her about my job or anything. She sees a lot of new and exciting opportunities coming for me in the new year. I got all these readings done late 2022, so by the time this video actually comes out, we get to see if that's true. She also said I'm planned to live a long and healthy life past my 80s, and she foresees me moving to a different location sometime when I'm older, which is most likely true. I don't like LA. It freaks me out. She identified my bad time of the day, which she said is 3 a.m. Again, true. If life gets a bit too hard to handle, I will absolutely have a meltdown in bed at that time. But also, everyone has a meltdown when they're broken and it's late at night. That's a universal bad time. They even wrote a rule in life about it. Nothing good happens after 2 a.m. But it's good to be more aware of because I forget, and 3 a.m. hits different some nights. She said, "I've always been connected to animals. I'm gonna be a mother of three." Okay, the other psychic did say that. Mental note. And for some reason said I should get into hiking, which just sounds like a nice hobby recommendation. I didn't know tarot cards and palms could say that. I asked her about my birds. I didn't get the spiritual protection from the other psychic, so they are still in jeopardy. And she said, although she's reading that they should be safe, if I'm worried about any medical issues, I should just go to the vet and get general checkups done. Which, you know, I respect a lot. I came in asking about the health and safety of my animals and she told me what she read, but if I'm actually concerned, to just go to a doctor. And didn't charge me $427 for it. Overall, Psychic 2 was very nice. She gave me a good reading, didn't try to sell me anything, and reminded me that doctors exist. Psychic 3 was kind of back in the same vein as Psychic 1. She almost immediately said I'm gonna live past my 80s and have 3 kids. Alright. She said she sees me having good financial fortune and good opportunities are coming in the new year, but she also said in August, a man with a beard and or mustache is gonna approach me with a business opportunity and to be wary of him. And then, before I could even process that, she said I may be involved in a light car accident in the next few months, possibly a fender bender. This is the first psychic that was this blunt about straight up predicting things, and by the time this video comes out, those months would have passed already, so I'll add right now if I was in a car accident. She also said someone near me is gonna have a baby and that I'm gonna become very attached to it. And that's gotta be the most incorrect sounding prediction of all the psychics so far, because I am not a fan of babies. I don't like them. I think they are weird and unpredictable. I do not care who in my group of family or friends has a baby. I'm staying the hell away from it. She went back to reading me as a person, said I'm very trusting and to be aware of jealous people that are around me. In this industry, that's pretty fair. Then she said it seemed like I had a big purchase on my mind, to which I admitted there was something expensive I saw that I've had my mind on for a while. She asked what it was because she foresaw it being good for me, and I told her about the new giant Altaria plush that Pokemon announced. I don't think that's what she expected though, because she seemed to lose a little focus after that one. But I did end up buying it. I asked about my birds, just like I have been for all of them, and she said they seem safe. However, after reading me for so long, she sensed my chakras were imbalanced, which was a shame because I could have sworn they were properly aligned. Anyway, she would like to help with them. I said, sure, and she hit me with the meditation prayer bit and how I'm only paying for the materials and not her time, and they're gonna cost $375. Much cheaper than Psychic One, but man, that's like the same setup and kicker. And no medical protection to boot. I politely declined and left. I gotta say though, this psychic was the first one to straight up tell me, you're gonna be in a car accident. A bearded man is gonna approach you in August. Like, just real life things. Whether or not they come true, you gotta respect that gamble. Definitely an all or nothing type of psychic. She was also the most expensive one yet. The other psychics were both $90, but this one charged me $162 for the readings. Now, Psychic 4 was a doozy, might I tell you. I walked up to her shop door, entered the room, and no one was there. I immediately walked back out because it's weird to be just there alone, and texted her I was here, to which she responded, give me 15 minutes. Kinda strange a psychic is running late, but I'm not here to get into that irony, so I just sat on a little chair and waited outside. 15 minutes passed, then 20, 30, this lady was 40 minutes late to a psychic reading. I brushed it aside because whatever, and we started. She let me pick my tarot cards, laid them out in the formation, and told me she's very surprised I picked a lot of queen cards. Apparently, in the standard tarot card deck of 78 cards, there's 4 queens, and I randomly picked 3 of them. She explained that's no accident, so you heard it here first, people. Certified and indisputable queen over here. The stars said so. She led with how she sees I have a good, strong energy. I work for everything I have. I've got good financial stability. I'm gonna run my own company and be a good leader. But she sees a lot of jealous people around me and to be careful about them. I tried to explain YouTube to her because I felt like that would explain all the things she just said, since all things considered, it's pretty accurate. But after like 5 minutes of trying to explain what a YouTube channel is, she just gave up and was like, sorry, I just don't understand technology. Fair enough. Also, sure, all of what she said was surprisingly accurate, but I'm always wary of what can be used as a blanket statement, especially when it comes to the financial stuff, because I don't know, I think going to psychics is a bit of a luxury expense. Not everyone can afford to pay upwards of $100 just to be told they've got positive vibes and are gonna be in a car accident. But then Psychic 4 said, I don't know how you do it, but you're making at least X per month, and gave me a very specific range of what I actually do make per month. That's what definitely perked my ears up. You know, I don't have a normal job, and even after not understanding how I make money, she was able to drop a number that was pretty close, all things considered. Then she said she sees me living a long and healthy life, and that I'm gonna be a mother of 3. I haven't directly talked about it yet, but I would like to say it's hauntingly strange how literally all 4 psychics have told me I'm gonna be a mother of 3. None of them even asked me if I like kids in the first place, they just straight up told me point blank. I don't know what about me is giving off I'm gonna have 3 kids vibes, but it needs to stop. I absolutely do not want 3 kids. It's too many kids for me to handle. I'm gonna have to figure out how to change the fates, like, immediately, because it's all feeling a bit too real at this point. They also all said I was gonna live a healthy life past my 80s, so if I die at 50, I want all of my money back. Anyway, Psychic 4 kept talking, saying it seemed my birds are safe, because I asked, but there seems to be a negative energy trying to attack them, to which she'll start meditating to protect them. Also, my chakras seem unaligned, and my third eye isn't very developed despite how old my soul is. which sure is the sentence, so she recommended a chakra meditation thing. She had me lay on her table under a lamp of RGB crystals and turned on relaxing spa music. Then she told me to close my eyes, because when your eyes are closed, your third eye opens, and that's why you dream when you sleep. It's your third eye. You learn something new every day. Anyway, I laid there. She gave me some crystals to hold and put more crystals on my chest and stomach and legs and put a bell on my forehead that she would ring every few minutes. After a bit of that, she told me she had to leave the room for 5 minutes so her energy doesn't interfere with mine. But I could swear she left me on that table alone and blindfolded for like 15, maybe more. After she remembered I was still there, she came back, sprayed me with lavender, which was pleasant, did little karate chops on my body, and then had me sit up. I did hit my head on the RGB crystals, so I hope that didn't jostle my chakras. And that was that! She said I had a lot of energy and that I'm an old spirit, but I need to develop my third eye more, and she's gonna send me home with a couple incense to burn, and that I need to come back tomorrow. At this point, I was in too deep. All the other psychics, I was able to squeeze my way out of these situations. But I just ended up doing it this time, mainly because she told me to burn incense, but I didn't have an incense burner, and then she lent me hers, and I didn't want to just take it and dip. So I burnt the incense like she told me to, and went back the next afternoon thinking that was it, and after that I could start not coming back anymore. But then she gave me some crystals, more incense, and bath salts this time, and told me to meditate in the bath while holding the crystals and also burn more incense, which meant I go home with her incense burner again. And that's when my friends told me to stop there and not go back. So I didn't. By the way, she charged me $776. I have no idea how she did that. She said the chakra thing where I lay on the table was like $100 or $200 extra. And then after we were done, she gave me the card reader and it said $650, to which I was just like, sure, whatever. And then my email receipt said $776. Again, I am reminded of how these people actually stay in business. She called me a queen, gave me a crystal nap, and then took $800 from me. And last but not least, Psychic 5. So for her, when I called to book an appointment, she told me she only takes cash and that I have to call 30 minutes before our appointment to confirm. So I did that a few days later when our appointment was scheduled, and she's like, oh, I'll be honest, honey, I completely forgot about you. Can we reschedule to tomorrow? Which is like, first of all, how does a psychic forget? I rescheduled to the next day, but a few hours later she called me back and was like, actually, I overbooked you on top of a different appointment. Can we reschedule to next week? And at this point, I'm annoyed, but again, I'm like, whatever. So we reschedule again. I called to confirm 30 minutes before again, and once again, she forgot. So I just gave up. Tell me how many kids I'm gonna have! And that was my psychic experience. I'm still pretty indifferent about all of it, but I can totally see how and why people can get super into it if they surround themselves with the culture. Whether it's real or I believe it or not, it was surprisingly nice to be told things were gonna be okay. I do think some of them can be a bit predatory on people at their low points, but hey, it's great to have my chakras rebalanced.
Cool new guy alert! We made a super cute Ari pillow available now. Look at this big man. He is huge and super soft and awesome. Head over to jadenanimations.com to pick one up. I genuinely love him so much. Also, I've been streaming a lot more recently and wanted to say the influx in art from all of that has absolutely blown me away. Thank you guys all so much. I try to see all of it, but it's quite literally impossible. But yes, thank you, thank you. Alright, until next time. Bye bye!
I just played one of the best Pokemon games ever, and I'm here to tell you all about it. I'm a huge Pokemon fan. Ruby was one of the first video games I remember owning, and I've decided to devote the rest of my life and soul to the franchise. And by that, I mean I'll play the new games when they come out. Do I have to like them? No. Frankly, I think the past few recent ones have been kind of garbage. But that won't stop me from getting my hopes up, thinking the next game will be different, even though deep down, we all know it won't be. But Pokemon does have a few side games you might have heard of, like Pokemon Mystery Dungeon, or Pokemon Stadium, or that weird geometric one. But there's one franchise that I feel like doesn't get talked about nearly as much as it deserves, and that's Pokemon Ranger. I had the original Pokemon Ranger game as a kid, and I remember two things about it. I liked it, and circles. Lots of circles. the flashbacks are beginning. When I remembered Pokemon Ranger existed, I decided to look it up and see if it was worth possibly making a video on, and that's when I realized there were actually three Pokemon Ranger games. Pokemon Ranger, Pokemon Ranger Shadows of Almia, and Pokemon Ranger Guardian Signs. Bit of a Pokemon Ranger mouthful, but I digress. I was looking at some forums of people discussing which one they thought was the best, and the Shadows of Almia one seemed to be high on a lot of people's lists. So I bought the game. Now sit down and get comfy because I just played this game for the first time and I'm here to tell you about why it's the best game ever. The game starts off with your character taking the entrance exam to a Pokemon Ranger school, and it only took me 2 attempts to draw 5 consecutive circles around this barely moving Pikachu. You're dang right that's impressive. I guess that's all it takes because now I'm officially a member of this secret army for this inscrutable team school plotting to rule the world. Oh, he's just kidding. Yeah, it's a normal school. I'm introduced to my class and for some reason they've been like starved for new human contact or something because they're bombarding the teacher with questions. Are they a boy or a girl? Which is it? Is she cute? So I'm introducing myself and apparently the teacher catches this Keith kid looking at me with a big grin. Anyway, you go sit next to Keith. Oh, okay, just plop me right next to him. Yeah, I don't mind or anything. Thanks, Teach. Anyway, you get a tour of the school from this girl with me, meeting the other teacher, Mr. Kinsade, who's apparently a stickler for making sure kids don't run in the hall, and this kid Isaac that Rhythmi called Mushroom Hair. Both my IQ and my height in centimeters are 163. Alright, bud. After getting a feel for the school, you're taught how to capture Pokemon with your styler. Loops portray the feeling of friendship, so the more loops you draw around the Pokemon, the more it will submit to your friendship. That's nice. Touch the Bidoof. You finish the school day and are fast asleep in the dorms when all the students decide it's initiation time. Get up, sleepyhead, it's 4 a.m. time for your student initiation. Yes, sirs. They tell you to find all 4 of the stylers they've hidden around the giant school, and after doing so, you have to put them in the basement for some reason. So you head down there after finding them all and are in the basement when, why are you down here? Only I'm permitted to be in the basement. Leave now!
Anyway, Isaac, have you finished testing my very secret experiment no one can know about?
The rest of the school year goes on without any big problems. Pokemon Ranger Crawford comes and talks about what it's like to be a ranger. You save the milkman from some Bidoof. You attend a one-day internship at the local Pokemon Ranger base and they make you bring them their lunch as an important mission. Actually, while you're at the internship, someone runs over and says the Pokemon on the beach are acting strange. You go with the rangers to check it out to see all the Pokemon going crazy and save the day by capturing them with your loops of friendship. But yeah, that's weird. Finally, you make it to graduation. Jaden, come up and make a speech as the class representative. Oh, I'm the class representative, huh? Well, don't mind if I... So after saving everyone from a very strange rampage of Tangrowth, you start working at the Pokemon Ranger base you interned at. There's a call about some more Pokemon acting strange down in a nearby cave, so your first mission is to investigate what's going on. In the cave, you stumble upon this weird missile-looking machine that seems to be what's hypnotizing the Pokemon in its vicinity and making them go crazy. So you destroy it and everyone's proud of you. This Professor Hastings guy is called down from the Pokemon Union to take a look at the cave machine, and I guess he's like 100 years old or something because the Rangers want you to go meet him halfway in Pueltown to make sure he doesn't get lost and die along the way. You take one step in town, and oh god, all the Pokemon are going nuts. Turns out there's more of those rocket machines planted in the town, and as you're going around smashing them, you run into some guys that are not only very shady, but also terribly shifty. They run away to tell their leaders there's Pokemon Rangers smashing their stuff. And further into the town, you find them again with their admin, who's like, dude, what the heck? What do you have against our Giga Remos, you vandals? Treat things with respect! And then attacks me with Rattata and a Toxicroak. Not gonna lie, their battle music kinda bangs, though. Turns out they're part of this gang called Team Dim Sun, and after capturing their Pokemon with friendship loops, they decide to retreat. We're able to find Professor Hastings and bring him back to the base to analyze what we now know are Giga Remo machines. He finds a tiny black crystal in the center that seems to be the thing that allows Team Dim Sun to control the Pokemon. The base considers this a problem, which is reasonable. And now the Pokemon Union starts getting involved, which is like the big head honcho of Pokemon Ranger bases where all the Ranger prodigies are. The story continues as the Union tries to uncover more about what Dim Sun is up to, and you keep interrupting their plans. You catch him trying to drill a tunnel in the side of a mountain. You catch him having a secret base and cargo ship in the middle of a volcano, which Mr. Kinsade has found to be part of Dim Sun. Big surprise, didn't see that one coming. You haven't been running in the ship's hallways, have you? You catch them mining hundreds of dark crystal shards in an abandoned mine. That one was a bit of a problem because apparently there was the mother of all shadow crystals there, powerful enough to power this incredible machine they're in the middle of developing that they plan on using to control all the Pokemon within a 500-mile radius they got their grubby hands on and helicoptered away to their headquarters. Probably should tell someone about that. But the good thing is we ended up finding the diary of the Dim Sun president's father, who writes about how if we gather these three gems called the Tears of Princes, the gems will be able to combine their power and negate the power of the Shadow Crystal. Alright, let's go do that. The first gem is told to be in this giant ice castle called Alima Castle, and on the way there, you run into Dim Sun grunts trying to stop you. They're not hard to deal with, and they start getting a bit frustrated. I want to pay you with a snowball. Hard. You make it to the castle after swimming through a bunch of ocean boulders and whirlpools that totally didn't slow me down at all, and end up at the castle where Dim Sun is already running around in trying to get the gem first. These guys are blocked from going any further because this giant chunk of ice is in front of the door, and the grunts are like, man, that's a big hunk of ice. If we made snow cones out of it, we'd be able to feed like 403 people. And then they see me standing there and are all, hey, that outfit! What are they called again? Pokemon Ranger? You came for a snow cone? You deal with that whole situation and end up in the room just before where the gem is being kept, where you're introduced to one of the members of Team Dim Sun's Sinistrio, Ice. I don't know what his deal is, but he called me Jaden Noob and then dabbed, so I had to murder him. Well, I captured and freed his Froslass, and he scurried away all, well, I didn't need the gem anyway. After gaining the trust of the Lucario guarding the gem with more of my loops, the blue gem of the Tear of Princes is mine. Fast forward a bit, and you get the red gem as well after defeating Sinistrio Lavanna and her Infernape. She doesn't dab, but she does do this sexy little dance. The guy from school, Keith, who's a ranger now, was assigned to get the yellow gem and hasn't come back yet, so the Union's like, alright, Jaden, go check on him. You hop on a boat to the destination, but whoops, apparently a Wailord is in trouble. I'll just go down there and see. Yep, I thought so. These Dim Sun grunts are trying to kidnap a Wailord, and after destroying the machines that were trapping it, they decide to just grab a Wailmer instead and try to convince their boss it's a Wailord mini. You follow them on the rescued Wailord and start infiltrating their base. Down a hall, you discover the grunts squishing the Wailmer through the door, and as you follow them into the room, they're like, oh crap! Shoot. Do you want to deal with the ranger? Oh, no, I'm too wimpy. I know. Let's apologize. Sorry. We got the ranger's confidence. Charge! And then drop a truckload of Slackoth on me. After capturing all their Slackoth, they're like, oh, no! And then all of them just grab me and shove me out of the room and lock it. Which honestly is more effective than like 99% of all video game villains. So you keep running through the base and end up actually finding mushroom-haired Isaac from Ranger School. He's been manipulated into building Dim Sun's incredible machine, and we agree to take him back to the Union after we finish up our business in the secret hideout. We finally encounter Mr. Kinsade, who's manning the Wailord operation. He's being all maniacal, but we successfully capture his Gliscor, save Wailmer, and bring Isaac safely back to the Union, where he gives us access to the incredible machine blueprints. Skipping ahead in the story a bit, we end up not being able to get the yellow gem because Heath, the last of the Sinist trio, kidnapped Keith and we exchanged him for the yellow gem. I kept trying to say no, but I guess it's good we saved him. The Union makes a plan to have their top rangers go and fly to Dim Sun's headquarters and face them head on. Jaden, you can just sit in the corner and do nothing. But right as they leave to do that, the Sinist trio busts through the Union walls and are like, ha ha ha, we'll be taking this, and steal back Isaac because they need him to complete the incredible machine by midnight so they can activate the Shadow Crystal. Isaac complied because they threatened to kill his sister or something. So new plan, now I have to get Isaac back and basically destroy the machines that were protecting their building slash incredible machine because, oops, I didn't mention this before, but they turned their entire building headquarters into the incredible machine. What? We basically just waltz right through the front doors of the headquarters. Heh, that'll stop people from entering. What? How did you get in here? And battle our way up to Isaac, who's like, you're a bit too late. I totally just completed the entire machine, and they're about to use it to hypnotize all the Pokemon in the region in, like, 5 minutes. Well, at least your sister's not dead. So you run to the top, defeating the Sinist trio every floor of the way, and grab the last tiers of Prince's gym. And you get to the top where you meet the Dim Sun President Blake Hall for the first time, and he's like, you're too late. It's time for darkness. Get her, Desknor. And then I capture it immediately. And he's like, just kidding. Get her, Darkrai. And then Darkrai just starts dipping me into darkness, and Keith has to come save me on his Staraptor. So Darkrai's like, well, then I'm gonna just dip these guys into the darkness, and throws Blake and his assistant into the void. Haha. But I decide to capture and free Darkrai anyway with the help of the Tears of Princes and save the day. Yay, woohoo! I'm a hero. Time to take a nap. Now, Pokemon Ranger is a big game. It took me about 24 full hours to get through the game, so I had to leave out a lot, and I mean a lot, of other points in the story. There's even a bunch of side quests that are actually pretty entertaining and funny you can complete that help power up your styler. There's one where this guy says he researches smells and wants me to bring him the stench of a muck. So you do it, and he's like, yes, and puts it in a jar. Then later on in the game, he pops up again, and this time asks for a Weezing and a Skuntank, to which he's like, yes, and puts them in jars. Then he's like, thanks, dude, and you never see him again. The dialogue is absolutely amazing. This game has probably the best writing out of any Pokemon game I know of. Team Dim Sun is obviously the star of the show, and whenever they come on screen, you know they're gonna have something funny to say. At one point, while I was trying to get into their secret base in the volcano, I captured the Pokemon they were controlling, and they're like, time to make our escape, and set off dynamite, which exploded a giant boulder and blocked the entrance to the base, which they're like, shoot, we were supposed to detonate it after we go in. So they had to wait for me to go get a Pokemon that can destroy the rock. And they're like, thanks, Ranger, we'll be grateful for this for about a second. And they run through the door. So you follow them, and they come back like, hey, we forgot about you helping us. Take this! And drop a bunch of Numble on me. Also, all of the music that plays when they're around is awesome. I was jamming out whenever I was running around their base. It's a bummer this game isn't super popular. I know it's got a small cult following, but it definitely deserves to be more well-known, and I really consider it one of the top Pokemon games out there, just on writing alone. It's not a hard game, but, I mean, Pokemon isn't meant to be a difficult game series anymore. I can see some people getting a bit tired of the capture system since it doesn't change much throughout the game, but honestly, again, I think the story and dialogue far make up for the semi-repetitive capture and battle system. Now, I know I kind of just talked about the entire plot, but if you're curious about playing it yourself, there's so much I left out, and there's still a lot to discover about the game, so I highly recommend it. I'm being honest when I say I didn't even cover a third of what happens in the game, and there were a lot of funny moments I really wanted to talk about that I just didn't have room for in the script. I'm just trying to convince you to play the game yourself at this point, because I think it's just that funny of a game. But I'll stop. But here's all my stats after completing the game. It took me about 24 hours to complete it. I captured 734 Pokemon and ran away from 106. I think that's a pretty good ratio. And look, I drew a total of 9,077 loops. With that amount of practice, I bet I'm a master at drawing circles now.
Thanks for watching the video on me drawing circles for 20 hours. Huge thanks to the team for their hard work. This video was massive, and it turned out amazing. I've mentioned this before, but I've been enjoying the video game videos a lot, so if you have a weird game you think I should take a look at, let me know. A lot of people have already been requesting this game called Elite Beat Angels, which is some sort of rhythm game with male cheerleaders, which looks amazing, but I think that video would get mega copyrighted, so unfortunately I don't think I can play that on YouTube. It looks really good though if you want to check it out. Anyway, I don't have much to say this time, so see ya later.
When I was living on my own for the first time, I had to go to the store and get milk and paper towels. And that was the first time I was like, wow, I am such a freaking adult. I really appreciate the childhood my parents were able to give me. I'm really privileged to have grown up in a functional house where my parents didn't want me to die. I made a parent stories video a little over a year ago, and I rewatched it to make sure I didn't repeat any topics. And all I'm gonna say is those stories and animation are not worth 10 million views. That video, I don't like it. I don't like that video. My parents were really, really big on manners and being polite. We've got some Asian blood in us, so we can't bring dishonor to our family. We'd do all the typical things, like call adults Mr. and Mrs., ask to be excused from dinner, make sure to thank everyone for everything ever, bow to our superiors. When my mom had new people come over to the house, she would make me introduce myself and shake their hand. And then when no one was looking, she'd pull me aside to a different room and quiz me. What color are their eyes? That was my mom's training course to get me to be good at eye contact, because I guess I used to be stupid and not look at people when they talked. But I remember that kind of backfired because I'd be so focused on memorizing their eyes that I wouldn't pay attention to what they were saying. Hi, Jaden, how are you? Alright, loser, I've got a quiz to take. Now that I've got 20 years of aced eye quizzes under my belt, I'm an eye contact wizard. I graduated top of my class in eye contact. I've got eye contact master's degrees. Well, every once in a while, some people make me nervous and I get shy. But other than that, I'm an eye contact powerhouse. I realized more recently that I think sometimes I go overboard and just end up staring at people by accident, and it's very weird, and I'm sorry at everyone. My mom would also be really strict on me saying pardon all the time instead of what. Like, she would say something I didn't hear and I'd go, what? And she'd stick her head around with, pardon? I wouldn't be a bimbo and be all, what? It's not like I was being a rude moron. One time, my friend told me, Jaden, I think you're the only person I know that says pardon. And like, that's all fine and dandy. I could respect my mom's request to use an underused polite word. But I can't. Because she's even worse. This is what she does. Mom, did you put my book somewhere? Huh? Objectively speaking, a what is exponentially better than a huh? I started mocking her whenever she did it, and then she gradually stopped bothering me about saying pardon. Also, I realized I never told you that I had a lisp as a kid. My parents meme on me about it all the time, and a running joke in the family came from when I used to be babysat by my mom's friend, who's Italian, which means she'd talk like this and have her house full of a spaghetti, and oh mamma mia. I'm only half joking. She's very Italian. Yahoo! She would make pasta for me all the time, and whenever she would ask what I wanted for lunch, I would pathetically go, pasta with no sauce! I wanted pasta with no sauce. And now, if my family would be having pasta for dinner, someone would end up going, I don't have a lisp anymore. Sometimes it shines through when I talk too fast or get sloppy with my words, but somehow I fixed it by myself. In first grade, we were learning about letter pronunciation, and when we got to S, the teacher explained that some kids say S with their tongue, when it's actually supposed to be behind your teeth. And I was like, oh. So I stopped doing it. Cured. Who knew that if you've got a speech impediment or some sort of hindrance or obstruction in your life, just stop it. Simple.
You've got cancer.
No, it's okay. Just stop it. When I was learning how to swim, my mom and her friend, who also had a daughter my age, hired a swim instructor for us, and I don't remember a single thing about it except that she made us hang off the edge of the pool and just shimmy across the side. But I was terrified of these filters against the side and always refused to go across them because I was scared of being sucked in or something. I don't know how I passed that class because I refused to do the exercise. But at least I knew her eyes were blue. And then at the end of each lesson, she'd give us a piece of licorice, like we were dogs.
I didn't like licorice.
Oh yeah, and also this one time I almost drowned and died. So my parents were having a bunch of their friends over, who also had kids, for a pool party. There were a handful of pool toys, like blow-up dolphins and beach balls, but we also had this floating foam mat. I was doofing off doing my own thing, and at one point when I was underwater, the mat drifted over top of me. When I had to go up for air, I hit the bottom of the mat, and I was like, uh-oh. Time for advanced critical problem solving.
So if this mat is over top of me, I can't get up to the surface to breathe. So what do I do? I got it.
I'll simply become a child Hercules and lift 3 6-year-olds from underwater into the air with my twig arms. Rather than using one of my 4 brain cells and swimming 2 feet to the side away from the mat, I decided to try and just bench press my way to survival. One of the adults realized I was being an idiot and also dying, and instead of being like, well, survival of the fittest, he dove in and saved me. So I didn't end up drowning of stupidity. Thank you, Mr. Chad. And now I'm here, on my own, moved to California, in my own place, not dead at the bottom of a pool, staring at everyone. Being honest, I love my family so much, and they've done so much for me. It takes a lot of effort to raise a person. Just think about how helpless and stupid babies are when they start out. They can't do anything. You can just put a baby on the ground and do nothing. Just leave it alone, and it'll just... pathetic. I'm so thankful and lucky my family's so supportive about everything I've been able to do, because I know not a lot of parents are like that. They even helped me sell merch at VidCon. They were so happy about it too. They came up to me after every day like, oh my gosh, Jaden, everyone's so wonderful. The people who watch your videos are so sweet. Someone asked me to sign their shirt, so I just wrote Jaden's mom. I was really nervous to pursue this career path because it can be a bit unpredictable, but the fact that they're so proud and encouraging has helped me do so much more than I ever would have thought I could if I was alone. So thanks, Mom and Dad. Brown, Hazel. So I just got back from VidCon Australia, and I wanted to say that that was amazing. I've never been upside down before. I was on a few panels with some friends like James and Jezza and Maz, and got to meet a bunch of really amazing, nice people. Maz, Jezza, and I were in the opening show, and I ended up having to draw a wombat with my elbows, which was very difficult, especially since I didn't know what a wombat looked like. If you want to see that, you can check it out on Jazz's channel. He posted that whole thing. I got to hold a snake and pet a kangaroo. It was kind of cold and windy and rainy, but I also got to meet an owl and a whole bunch of you. Just a really overall great experience. I am so appreciative that you guys like my stuff. I also wanted to update you that my shop manager and I are working on a new shop relaunch. We weren't content with the old one and wanted to make better stuff, so there's a bunch of new products and much more really cool things coming, like, maybe a little Ari bag. I don't know. Oh, geez. Link is in the description if you want to check it out. Thanks for watching. I really mean it. I'm excited to start pushing for more video improvements and just get a bunch of really cool stuff done. Okay, it's getting really hot in this closet. See you later. Bye. Thanks for everything. I love you.
Ah, Animal Crossing. The game that's keeping most of the population sane while 2020 burns outside our windows. Like many fans of the franchise, I have a very special place in my heart for Animal Crossing. See? I put it right there. Growing up, I loved video games, but I didn't have very many friends. Sad. And within those few friends, most of them weren't super into video games. Sad. So I grew up playing games either alone or with my brother. Sad. What I'm getting at is, I'm not used to being able to connect with people over video games, let alone get to experience them with my friends together. But the one game that my few friends did play was Animal Crossing Wild World on the DS. I remember playing Animal Crossing for hours, days, sometimes mostly weeks in a row, during summer vacation with my best friend Kate. It was always the highlight of our summer, and depending on your point of view, that may or may not be depressing. My family also used to have a tradition to visit the rest of my family in Canada every July, so my brother and I would continue to play Animal Crossing with our cousins. Nothing could stop us. Not even the great borders of the United States of America. We had this game we made up where we all meet up at one person's town, dig a bunch of holes in the shape of a maze, and then one of us would chase the others around with a bunny hood, gas mask, and axe, like some sort of morbid tag. We called it the Bunny Game, which looking back was a bit misleading in the innocence of the actual premise. When Animal Crossing New Leaf was released, Kate and I got our hands on it the day of our high school sophomore prom, and we very much wanted to ditch it entirely just for the game. It's not like we had dates or anything, but we ended up going anyway, and it was lame. All in all, I love Animal Crossing. I get that it's not a game for everyone because of its slow pace and open-ended nature, but it was one of the few games I got to experience with friends on a really deep level and collected a bunch of fond memories with. Now we have New Horizons, the game that parted the clouds and descended upon us when the world needed it most. I like the game a lot. I've got my gripes, which I'll get to at some point, but while playing the game, I started thinking about the original, Animal Crossing for the GameCube. I had a GameCube growing up, but my mom didn't buy Animal Crossing for us, so that meant I had no idea it existed. That's just how the world worked for me back as a kid. If my mom didn't buy it for me, then it didn't exist. So now, as an adult, I've started to make the connection that not only do I have my own money to buy my own video games, but I can do whatever I want, mostly. And using that newfound power, I've decided to go back to the basics and experience firsthand the beginning of one of my favorite game franchises. What's changed? What secrets have been hiding from me? Well, I guess we're about to find out together. The classic train scene. Rover walks over and asks if he can sit with me, promising not to fall asleep and drool on my shirt, to which I reply, "No way!" Wow, it's nice to know there's still plenty of rude people in the world. And he sits there anyway. So you go through the typical beginning of an Animal Crossing game. Who are you? I'm Jaden. Where are you going? Mustard. What's your credit card number and mother's maiden name? September 27th. My friend has a house for you because you're stupid. Okay, you arrive in town, meet Tom Nook, and he offers to let you check out the vacant houses he's got. Let's see. We've got medieval torture dungeon, haunted backyard garden shed, Chinese sweatshop locker room, and 15th century empty pool. Yeah, I'll take a locker room, please. After settling on a place, Tom Nook asks for the payment of 19,800 bells, to which I realize I have nothing, so I'm like, no. And he's like, you better freaking give me the money. So I'm like, here. To which he realizes I barely have even 0.05% of what he wants from me, and he straight up laughs in my face. You only have 1,000 bells? You're joking with me, right? Why, you're so short, I can't help but laugh. So he puts me to work at his shop to earn the rest of the money. You get various tasks to complete for Nook, be it planting nice flowers around his shop to make it look nice. I planted them around my house. Meeting the other villagers, making deliveries. Bro, when I delivered this Sue E chick her, like, signed copy of The Notebook on Blu-ray or whatever junk she ordered, she completely just destroyed me out of nowhere. Boy, that's mine. Why do you have it, Jaden? Are you working for Tom Nook or something? Oh, you are? How amusing. You mean to tell me you didn't have enough money to buy a house when you moved? Well, how silly. Were you the mental run to the litter or what? Oh, I'm just having a little fun with you. I suppose everyone has to take a bold step once in their lives. So, you must not have any money to buy furniture. Don't be ashamed. Here, take this blue wardrobe. You simply must take it. I bet you go home to a sad little empty house every day, don't you? It may not be much, but beggars can't be choosers. And that's when I realized how absolutely brutal this game had the capability of being. I heard that it could be sassy at some points, but I was straight up murdered by this gothic drag queen pig just for being a delivery boy. You can't say that to the, like, Amazon Prime delivery guys. What the heck? That's how you get your stuff smashed. So you know what I did? I sent the biggest guy in town, Rocco, a letter and used my smooth talking skills to try and send him a signal and take care of her. And just in case that didn't work out, I made a community bulletin board post to warn the others. After you finish being a corporate wage slave, the game finally becomes the Animal Crossing experience I'm used to. Catching bugs, finding fossils, waiting an entire week for Tom Nook to finally sell a stupid fishing rod. I'll admit, coming from New Horizons, the original Animal Crossing doesn't have much to offer. Maybe it held up better in the past, or I was able to have more fun with it because I was younger and easier to be entertained, but I found myself strapped on things to do. Sure, I could fish for 2 hours straight to make money, but I could also just play another game. Why I think New Horizons is the best game in the series so far, big asterisk on the so far, is that it saw where players were taking the franchise and ran with it far beyond what we could have hoped for. Oh, people really enjoy being able to customize their house and are using the little pattern spaces to make cool paths for their town? Well then let's give them a bigger town, and more pattern spaces, and hundreds of new and modernized furniture items, and let them put them outside wherever and however they want, and let's let them shape the earth and sea. I've put hundreds of hours into New Horizons already, and I'm not nearly done with the game. My island still looks like crap. I played the original Animal Crossing for a week or two, and could only put at max an hour into it per day, because I ran out of things I wanted to do. Oh, so New Horizons is the most superior game in every possible way, right? Ha ha ha, no. While New Horizons has much more for you to do, the thing I think the original Animal Crossing got right that the new one doesn't is the villagers. Since I would get bored of continuously failing at fishing in the GameCube version, I found myself talking to the villagers much more often, and that's where I had the most enjoyment. The conversations with the villagers in the GameCube version have so much flavor. Sure, Sue E called me a mental run to the litter just a minute ago, but that brought out something in me that New Horizons hasn't been able to do within 300 hours of me playing. Talking to the villagers in the GameCube version made me remember why I liked the game so much as a kid. They say and do interesting things. I don't know if it's just me, but New Horizons has some of the blandest text I've seen in Animal Crossing yet. It feels like what they say is limited to like 5 things, and I honestly don't enjoy talking to them and haven't built a single connection to any of them on my island. I don't care who moves in, just so long as they're really super hot. I'm talking hunkalicious. Feels like it's been raining all the time lately. I hate getting wet. Jaden, you feel the same, right? No, actually, I don't really mind. Oh, really? Well, why don't you just stay in the rain then, since you love it so much? And I hope you catch a cold! I don't know what it is about me, but I seem to be just as popular with boys and girls. It's madness. Meanwhile, in New Horizons... Hi, Jaden. Sometimes I like to sit. No, I don't want any! I'm telling you for the last time, you foul creature! Go away, hippie! Oh, wait, it's just you. I thought it was another one of those weirdos handing out tissues. Hi, Jaden. I've been having a good day. All right, see you later. Shrivel up and blow away, shrimp! At one point, I walked up to Sue E, and she just started screaming. I'm begging you, would someone please change that hideous town tune? Jaden, I highly doubt you have a talented bone in your body, but you do seem to be able to run fast. So be a dear and go change that horrible music, would you? So of course, I changed the town tune. Anything for Sue E, her wish is my command. I'll say, normally I'm not a big town tune changer in the games, but this one made me laugh. Is that better, Sue? You like that? I wasn't expecting to have an arch nemesis in Animal Crossing again, because it hasn't happened to me since Wild World, but Sue really just came into my life and slapped me around, begging me to hate her. Say, didn't you owe Tom Nook a fairly large sum of money? I was just wondering, did you ever manage to pay him back? Well, what's it to ya? Whoa, you seem a little touchy, Jaden. I guess you're still just a burden to society. But that's what Nintendo got wrong in the new games. I want drama. I want enemies. And bloodshed. The animals in New Horizons feel like just objects for me to judge on appearances and get items from. All in all, I very much like Animal Crossing. I know New Horizons isn't for everyone and is far from perfect, but I'm a big fan of the type of game it is, and the cons don't outweigh the pros for me. Do I wish the villagers had a shred of life to them? Yes. Do I hate the new music they wrote for it and desperately want to have the old music back? Yes, but I can put my Godzilla statues together like they're on a date. Is the old Animal Crossing lacking in objectives and even slower than I could have imagined? Yes, but at least I get verbally abused by my neighbors and can hit Sue E with my net.
So if you haven't heard... Oh god, Ari. So if you haven't heard, James just announced his new game, Cafe Chaos. It's a turn-based card game where you build food combinations and try to win a food fight against your opponents. There's different abilities and characters you can play as, and if you get the Animator Expansion Pack, you can find me in there with Ari and a lot of other animators. My food card is Pasta with No Sauce. It's a fun game James and his team worked really hard on, and what else are you gonna do during quarantine? You can check out more details by going to the Kickstarter. I put the link in the description. Anyway, thanks for watching the video. I didn't know what to expect going into the game, but I'm sure glad I did, because that was a whole experience. Alright, talk to you later. Bye.
I think we all know the gist of what a speedrun is. Play game fast. But there's so much more that goes into it than what's on the surface. People spend hundreds of hours practicing games, finding optimal routes, discovering the most precise glitches that can save from minutes to just a few frames, which if you don't know is basically risking your entire run just for a few milliseconds of time save. I've come to love speedruns, watching them at least. Something about them is really cool to me, and I think the community is really cool. It's all cool. I've been lurking and watching various speedrunners for a decent amount of time, and I decided that I wanted to do a speedrun. Now, I don't really have the time to set aside hundreds of hours to hone my skill on whatever game I want, so I decided I had to do a blind speedrun where I just play it for the first time and try my best. I spent a few days racking my brain on what game I'd like to run. I like Pokemon. Maybe I could run a Pokemon game. But that's a lot of researching and memorizing and luck. I could try a Mario game. It's a popular category, but I don't know if it's for me. Then it hit me. The perfect game. Of course, Why hadn't I thought of it sooner? I ran to speedrun.com to check if anyone has run it yet. No one. None. I'm going to be the first person in the world to speedrun Cooking Mama 2 Dinner with Friends. That I know of. Why did I choose Cooking Mama? Because, dude, Cooking Mama is awesome. If you haven't played, it's a DS game where you follow steps to make food and impress Mama. The better you do, the better score you get. Plus, I'm at an advantage when it comes to preparing food. I've seen Food Wars. I know all the techniques and secrets. If you're under 18, don't look it up. Why did I choose the second game and not the original? That's the one I bought. Duh. I used to play Cooking Mama all the time as a kid with my friend Kate. I always thought Mama's English was really funny.
You gave it your best effort.
I still love it. We even had this system where if we kept failing at a recipe, we'd have to change chairs because that one had bad luck. Obviously. I don't have that luxury this time because I have to stay by the computer, so I'll have to come up with a better strategy. Also, extra movements lose time. I need to be efficient here. Anyway, I wanted to have some sort of challenge, so I decided to add some rules to my run. One, I have to fully complete the main game mode, Cook with Mama. Two, I have to receive a gold medal in every single recipe. That means I can't make a mistake. Ever. Can't burn a single onion, can't accidentally pour the rice into the sink, can't smack my hand while pounding mochi. If I do, the whole recipe needs to be redone. Three, that's it. Do it fast, I guess. The first recipe is pizza, and I was off to a pretty good start. Obviously, it's a speed run, so I didn't have time to read the little description on what to do each step, but for the most part, I was able to use my massive IQ and big, strong brain to decode the objectives in split seconds. Except in the last step where I didn't know how to work the oven and failed immediately. Again, off to a great start. After deciphering how the oven worked, I was moving on quickly. Peanut butter, poke the peanuts, done. Oops. Recover, adapt, overcome. Done. Seabream carpaccio. Exfoliate the fish, chopping, restart. Choose smaller knife, easy peasy. Corn soup. Ew. Bald the corn, boil, strain. Oh, come on! Not all the corn came out. Alright, admittedly, I was making a lot of mistakes at the beginning. I was nervous because it was my first speedrun, and I didn't know what I had to do most of the time, and was generally panicking. But then I remembered that no Cooking Mama 2 speedruns exist yet, so that means I'm on world record pace, and that made me feel better. One mechanic I had to learn the hard way was, when it comes to the oven, choose the low heat. The first attempt, I decided to go with the medium heat to go a little bit faster. And look at this! Oh no! What was that? That was a speedrun in itself. Burn the apple pie as quick as possible. You know how there's separate categories in speedruns? Mario Odyssey has the one where you take Mario's shirt off as fast as possible called nipple percent. I want one for Cooking Mama 2 called burn apple pie percent, where you just burn the apple pie as quickly as possible. Anyway, I redid the pie and was moving on. Bonk. Ill rice bowl. We're about an hour in at this point. I had my friends in a Discord call so they can help me take notes so I didn't have to rewatch all the footage again for the script, and they decided to look up how many recipes there actually were in the game. I didn't know because I wanted to go in completely blind. And you know what they discovered? There are a total of 80 recipes in this game. An hour in, I was on recipe 8. Which would be impressive in real life, but not here. So either we were gonna pull a Cooking Mama all-nighter, or I had to start picking up the pace. Sorry, Shrimp, this is gonna get violent. It wasn't perfect, and I was still making some mistakes, but I started getting into the zone. It helped that I was starting to get familiar with the mechanics and actually know what the game wanted me to do for most of the steps now. Waffles, chili dog, meatloaf, lobster. I was one-shotting all of them. I even put 2 mama flags on the lobster, which was a bit risky, but you know me, I live for the danger.
I almost forgot to put the lobster on.
Let me pause and tell you a story of my childhood. I already mentioned my love for Cooking Mama as a kid. Even 12 years ago, I set myself the goal of getting gold in all the recipes. But one haunting memory I have of this game was my struggle against the Mama Rice Cracker. All the steps are relatively simple, but at the end you have to stamp all 18 crackers with a Mama stamp. That's what makes the Mama Rice Cracker the Mama Rice Cracker. But as a kid, my DS was old and I dropped it a few times, which messed up the calibration on my screen in a way I couldn't fix. So that meant at the very end of the recipe, it was extremely hard for me to stamp the stamp in the exact spot that Mama wanted. I spent weeks I'm not joking. Trying to get the gold on the Mama Rice Cracker. It was the last one I needed, and I couldn't do it. I just couldn't. I'm pretty sure I was eventually able to pass, but let's just say I didn't, for the sake of drama. Either way, I was having PTSD. I was going through all the steps, washing the rice, putting the rice in the little hole, mochi pounding the rice scoop, and then it appeared. The screen that caused the most pain a video game could to a 10-year-old. I was slowly making my way down the line. Everything was going well. Then all of a sudden, on the 10th cracker...
No!
I accidentally tapped the screen when I was lining up my pen, causing me to not brand the cracker enough. I'm not one to believe in spiritualism or star signs or Destiny's Child, whatever that stuff is. But that moment in particular made me question if it was all real and my only fate is to eternally fail the last step of the Mama Rice Cracker recipe until I inevitably die in an unaccomplished old man that makes ugly rice crackers. I did it right the next time, but that would have been unfortunate, right? With the Mama Rice Cracker conquered, now nothing was in my way, and I was making my way through the rest of the recipes. At the 2-hour, 37-minute mark, 27 recipes in, Ari got out of his cage and was running around the room, so I had to spend precious time getting him back under control. That was a loss of 2 minutes right there. Then I missliced the ravioli, so I'm blaming all of that misfortune on Ari. I actually struggled a lot on the ravioli recipe. The pasta is really hard to cut because you have to time the splice with the line, but since I was so focused on when to cut, a lot of the time I would deviate from the actual line to cut from and mess up. Then when I was able to get past that stage, for some reason the mic had trouble hearing me blow, so even though I was doing what I was supposed to, I'd fail anyway.
No, do you hear it?
Overall, I had to redo the ravioli recipe 6 times, and I spent 11 minutes on it. Not great. Thanks, Ari. But after that, I was able to one-shot both the cake and the spring rolls. And can we talk about how the ice cream recipe literally just makes you scoop out store-bought ice cream and put sprinkles on it? That's been my favorite recipe so far. Skipping forward a bit, let's talk about the mango pudding. This was ravioli part 2. The first step I had trouble with was memorizing the order of the ingredients. It was a 6-part Simon Says memory game, and my big smooth brain can only handle one number at a time before the concept of object permanence leaves my body. I inevitably got a lucky pattern that was easy to remember, and after a few more steps, in the end I had to draw a line at a specific speed that would remove the pudding cleanly. Too slow and it wouldn't come out, too fast and it just... For the life of me, I couldn't get the pacing right 3 consecutive times in a row. And with the combined difficulty of that, along with the memorizing, I spent another 10 minutes trying to get it right and still failing. My confidence was shattered and I had to take a mental health break. I'll be back for you, mango pudding. I'll come back stronger and I'll cook you so well I'll become the mama. I was in shambles from the pudding, but was able to move on and started getting back into a rhythm. All these foods, I was knocking them out one by one. I will note that I struggled with popcorn because I thought there was going to be some sort of indicator or something on when to open the lid. So I just sat there until I realized I burnt it all.
Oh, wait.
So I was like, oh, okay, I'll open it when I hear the popping sounds. And then I opened it with like 5 popcorns. But it's okay, I was able to figure it out. Overall, the rest of the run went on without any major problems. I was able to finish up the rest of the recipes, and at the 6-hour, 38-minute mark, I only had 2 recipes left. The bento box, and of course, the mango pudding. Time is ticking, we're in the endgame now. Also, my Discord friends were ready to never talk to me again. I thought I could just get the bento box over with quickly, because it's like... You just put food in box, right? Well, actually, I didn't realize I had to include food from all the categories Mama gave me, or something. So I failed it like 3 times and was on the brink of insanity, trying to figure out what Mama wanted from me. The food is in the box, Mama! What's what a bento box is? Food in box! What else do you need? Blood? A blood sacrifice? It didn't say anywhere in the instructions that I should have put more variety in there. Not that I was reading the instructions anyway. I still, right now, don't know what Mama wanted, but at least I finally got the gold. After 4 minutes. That meant I only had 1 last recipe. 79 were completed. The mango pudding was the only thing standing between me and the first Cooking Mama 2 Dinner with Friends world record. I clicked it nervously, but I climbed my mountain. I trained with Mama, and I've come back a new chef. Peeling, slicing, blending, I was quicker than ever. There it was, the memorizing. I was doing well, until...
No!
I restarted. I was sweaty and shaking. My brain was shutting down. My eyes had only been seeing Cooking Mama for the past 6 hours and 45 minutes. Every breath was Cooking Mama. Every neuron in my skull was Cooking Mama. Every atom in the universe at that moment was Cooking Mama. But my next attempt, oh my God, oh Jesus, is this the one? I nervously went through the rest of the recipe until I arrived at the last step. It's been about 3 hours and 15 minutes since I practiced removing the pudding from the mold, and to be honest, I don't remember the removal strats. First one, second one, let's go! I got all the puddings out flawlessly. I waited until the results to confirm it. Boom! 100 points on the mango pudding. Stop the timer. I did it. At long last, all 80 recipes in Cooking Mama 2, gold. In 6 hours, 47 minutes, and 27 seconds. There might be some room for improvement there. Overall, I had a really fun time with the speedrun. It's not even close to a good run, and the time can easily be halved, but I still pride myself in knowing I was the first one to complete and document the Cooking Mama 2 all gold percent, and also burnt apple pie percent. If there's any speedrunners out there wanting to try and take my crown, I'll share some speed strats I thought of during the run. If you complete the steps too quickly, you get a bonus, and at the end of the recipe, if you get 5 bonuses, you receive a gift that you can't reject or skip, which loses a lot of time. You're smothering me, Mama. So if you can get no bonuses within the entire game, you'd be saving a lot of time. Another tip is, if you're gonna mess up the recipe, don't mess up the last step, because if you do, you have to wait through Mama giving you your score and clapping for you and being like, yeah, it's almost perfect. And the whole time you're like, yes, Mama, I know it's not perfect. I dropped an egg. And then she gives you like 3 presents in a row because you got too many bonuses. And you're just screeching at her to shut up the whole time. I didn't discover any glitches that would save time, unfortunately. I don't know what a Cooking Mama glitch would look like, but it doesn't sound pleasant. But it doesn't matter, because as of this moment right here, I'm the one with the Cooking Mama 2 Dinner with Friends world record. Guess I finally did something with my life after all. Anyway, thanks for watching my first attempt at a speedrun. I think, in hindsight, I should have chosen a game that could have been done in a few less hours, because I feel like I aged 20 years after this. But you live and learn.
I wanted to submit my run to speedrun.com, but since no one has run the game yet, I need to submit a request to add Cooking Mama 2 Dinner with Friends. But I only made my account last night, and to make a request, I need to have had my account for 7 days. So I'll submit it in 7 days. But it's not gonna be interesting, I didn't record my audio with it. It's just 6 hours of Cooking Mama gameplay. Also, we're working to drop some new merch in the shop really soon. I don't know if it's on the site yet, but it's coming, and we've got some real fun stuff in the works. All right, that's it. See you later.
Welcome to 2018, Jaden. What's different? Nothing yet, I don't think. If you're like me and don't plan on doing anything extraordinary this year but still want to spice things up, I have a few suggestions. You know me, living life on the edge. I'm exciting. I'm adventurous. Of course, the best way to make life more interesting is to induce a variable of surprise and the unknown. In 2017, I conducted my own apple research. I just ate a bunch of apples. Here we go. I just got really curious one day. There's so many different types of apples, and I don't know jack rabbit about any of them. Did you know there's... What the shit? Did you know there's 7,500 different varieties of apples? 200 in the US? Because that was the first time I actually Googled it. I didn't eat 7,500 apples last year, but every week when I went to the grocery store, I'd get a different type of apple I hadn't had before, so I'd be learning about a new apple every week. It sounds stupid, but shut up, I learned a lot about apples. You're such a vegan. So growing up, Mom always got us either Fuji or Gala apples, which are some of the most common apples in the US. This is all just my own opinion and research, by the way. If you have a different opinion, good for you. Gala is pretty much the standard average apple. Nothing bad, but nothing fantastic. Fuji are a bit brighter in flavor and crisper, but they're both good standard apples to make a constant variable. Ha! See, I learned something in 7th grade science. Now,
Yes, this is happening.
Back again with another legit fruit review.
Golden Delicious are softer and less sweet than Fuji and have more of an applesauce taste. I'm aware of the irony in that description. Prips Pink or Pink Lady Apples are firmer than Fuji but more tart. I don't like Red Delicious. They have a thick skin and mediocre flavor, and if you get a bad one, they're super gross and spongy. Everyone knows Granny Smith. She's green and tart. Sugar Bees are a lot crisper than Fuji and, like the name suggests, super sweet. A top tier apple. Envy tastes pretty much like Sugar Bee. Call me apple racist. Jazz Apples were a disappointment, mainly because I thought the name was cool and the grocery store had a fun little name tag for them. They didn't taste all that great. Ruby Frosts? No, wait, I'll go faster. Have thick skin and are kind of sour, but not as much as Granny Smith. Pacific Rose are my favorite and the best apple. If anyone tries to tell you there's a better apple, they're probably right because they only tried like 15 out of the 7,500 varieties, which is like 0.2%. But these are the ones I buy all the time now. Honey Crisp apples are crisp. Nah, they're good, but they're more expensive. Peru apples are really crunchy and taste like a weak gala. Rockets are super small and have a unique aftertaste. Macintosh are surprisingly super soft and sweet and taste nothing like a computer. Braeburn, also known as the worst apple to ever be genetically created. I tried it for the first time and was like, ugh, ew, whoa, what the freak? Like, it's trying to be sweet, but also tart at the same time, and it's like, just pick one, you're just a dumb apple. Apparently, they were created by accident and are a hybrid of Granny Smith and Lady Hamilton, so they're not even supposed to exist. Jeez, Granny Smith, use protection. But, I mean, to give them credit, that's pretty progressive considering it was the 1950s. Apparently, Braeburn is also a My Little Pony character. Anyway, avoid at all costs. I hope all the Braeburn trees Braeburn in a giant fire and rebirth into Pacific Rose ones. So now you're an apple master. Like me. Apple Research gave me something to look forward to each week and isn't very expensive since they're apples. I'm also currently running a similar experiment on mint gum flavors. If apples aren't good enough for you, then try doing something you normally wouldn't do. But not because you're a new and improved person. Just to try and get a good story out of it. If you start trying to induce good stories, eventually you'll get one. When I was still in college, I had to take a service learning class where we had to earn 75 hours of service from some sort of internship without being paid. The one I chose, completely on my own, not because it was the closest to campus and I didn't have a car, was working as a teacher's aide at a children's Montessori. Don't know what a Montessori is? Me neither when I took the internship. It's a children's school where the teachers focus more on letting the kids learn things on their own more naturally than traditional teaching methods in elementary schools. Wait, Jaden, this sounds interesting. Can you explain a bit more? Nope, I'm moving on. So the main reason I chose the Montessori, not including the location, was because kids are funny. And there would be some great stories to come from babysitting a classroom of kindergarten to third graders 6 hours a week for a whole semester. I applied to the Montessori and scheduled an interview. I've never had a real job before, so I was super nervous and didn't know what to expect. The head teacher, Miss Frizzy, which isn't her real name, greeted me. Actually, no, first, I didn't know where the front door was. Like, I went up to the door that I thought was the entrance, but it was locked, so I called the number they gave me, and they said just go through the gate, and I didn't know where the gate was, but it ended up being around the side of the building, and the gates were all closed, so I thought I'd have to hop the fence to get into the school, but it would look super sketchy to see a college student hopping a gate to force their way into a children's Montessori. But I figured it out. So I met Miss Frizzy, but not in our own room. It was in the middle of the kids' class time when they were all running around with books and puzzles. She was like, hey there, nice to meet ya. And pulled out a kid's chair because they didn't have anything else. I sat down and my knees crunched up to my chin. It was a lot more casual than I thought it was gonna be. And probably should have been. There was one part where she was like, do you have first aid training? You legally need to have that if you want to work with children. And I will not confirm nor deny the possible first aid training in question, but yeah, we might have brushed over that one. Anyway, I got the internship, arrived the first day, and no one told me what to do. I was like, hi, how can I help? And also, how does everything work? Because I know nothing. Oh, yeah, just help the kids if they need help. Oh, okay, then. For the majority of the internship, I was stressed out and anxious because for 3 hours every time I went in, I felt like I had no purpose except walk around and smile at kids. Occasionally, I'd help one find a puzzle piece, but those were the exciting days. Also, two kids didn't even speak English. Like, what am I supposed to do when a kid's crying, I ask what's wrong, and I get,
ってかどうして私の言ってること分かんないのよ。日本人でしょ?
For an hour, the kids would have lunch and then go outside to play, and that was more manageable because I just had to make sure none of them backflipped off swings or something dumb. I could also pass the time and prevent insanity by sweeping sand off the pavement. My favorite memory by far when I was there was when a kid got stuck in a bucket. We just hear, "Help! To help!" and look over to a kid, upside down turtle with his butt in a pail. Pathetic. So what can you take away from this video? Braeburn apples were an accidental hybrid love child of two apples, and kids are incompetent at life. See, with a few little tweaks, it isn't hard to spice up your life. Now, go out and get yourself a funny story. Also, one day at the Montessori, a kid pooped on the sidewalk. Happy practically end of January. Sorry I haven't been able to get more videos out lately. Life hits you hard, bro. I'd like to thank Dave from Boy in a Band's sister, Hannah, for the little Japanese boy's voice. That was actual Japanese. She taught herself Japanese in her free time. She told me the translation, and I'm not gonna tell you. Little Easter egg for the people who teach themselves Japanese. Or already know it. I'd like to thank my extra animators again for helping out with scenes. People have been noticing, hey, that scene looks a bit different. And that's because we've got some other people helping out. I've said it before. It's not a secret. Their links are always in the description, and they're all really talented. I'm still looking for some extra permanent people because right now it's relatively casual. If you or someone you know has a style that can fit well with the videos, send me a portfolio at, I didn't plan this out, actually. Let's do jidenanimationsanimator@gmail.com. Yeah, no promises I'll be able to respond to your email. Last time I asked you for pet photos, Twitter blew up, and everything in my notifications were just pet photos for a solid week. It's not the same, but just a disclaimer. I also forgot that I also tried opal apples, and they're really good, IMO. Okay, I think that's all. Thanks for the patience. Bye.
Hey everyone, it is time for another Q&A. Let's do this. I got questions from Twitter and DeviantArt, so let's start answering them. The first question is, do you find animating hard? Okay, so animating is really not that hard as soon as you get the basics and you get into like a rhythm of knowing what you're doing. It's just how time consuming it is. You guys know because of how often I post animations on this channel. Because everyone likes an animation. I like posting animations, you like watching animations, but the only thing holding us back from this is just how much time is put into each animation. If you're trying to get into animation, don't be intimidated if people say it's hard, it's just finding the time to actually practice and start. Who inspired you to start drawing and animating? I got this question like a million times, so I'm going to answer it. As a kid, I was really never into celebrities or famous artists and stuff, so I never developed someone that I looked up to, strived to be like and stuff. So when I started doing art, it was just, you know, me doing my own thing. And of course, when I started getting into animation, I watched the typical animation channels on YouTube, but they never really inspired me to make my own channel. So I don't really think I have anyone that really inspired me. If anything, you guys are my inspiration because I get so many kind comments and messages saying like, oh my gosh, I love your channel, and oh, you brightened up my day, thank you, stuff like that, and that really motivates me to do better. So I guess you guys are my inspiration. Alright, have you ever been sick or injured? I'm a pretty safe person. I've never broken a bone or gotten deathly ill or something like that. The worst this would be a good animation idea, but I'll tell you guys anyway. When I was in fourth grade, I had the shoes with the wheel on the bottom. Heelys. this isn't sponsored because they freaking sucked. I was playing in the road, and I was going down a hill, and there was like the tiniest pebble that I ran over, and it jammed the wheel, which flung me forward, and I landed on my chin on the road. I think it was the adrenaline or something, because I didn't feel it, it really didn't hurt, so I was like, oh no, I'm fine, but my mom was like, oh my god, we're going to the hospital, and then I got 3 stitches. But it wasn't that bad, because my parents let me go to school late that day, but that's really the worst thing that's ever happened to me. Alright, next up, cats or dogs? I'm allergic to cats, so that helps factor in my vote there. But I do like cats, but even if I wasn't allergic to cats, I still think I would like dogs a little bit more. Actually, I'm really a bird person, so if anything, birds out of cats or dogs. I've always wanted to have a bird. So, dogs, between cats or dogs, birds, if anything.
What are really good ways to improve your drawing? Literally, practice.
But Jaden, every single artist out there says practice.
That's because it works, and that's really the most efficient way to improve and get better. You can't become an amazing artist in just a week or a month. And the amazing artists out there, they have countless hours of practice behind them. So if you dedicate the time to it, you will start improving.
How do you feel about your fan base overall?
Literally? I am so surprised that people are actually interested in the content that I put out there, and they actually look forward to more things that I make. And I never thought that there would be tens of thousands of people interested in anything that I would do. Like, if someone were to tell me 10 years ago that I'd be in the place that I am right now, I would have thought that they were lying. I've even gotten messages from people saying, "Jaden, you're my favorite YouTuber or artist or animator or something like that." And I'm over here like, oh my gosh, what? That is insane. There's so many better YouTubers out there and artists, and for some reason, you like me the best. I can't even grasp that idea. I'm so lucky to have you guys, and you all make me so, so happy. So, thank you so, so much for just being here. What's your least favorite candy?
Black licorice. Oh my gosh, I do not like it. It's such a weird flavor. Like, I don't know about you, but when I bite into it, it's like, whoa, what was that?
I think black licorice is just one of those flavors that you either really like or you really don't like. It doesn't ever seem to be like there's a middle. I don't really know too many people who actually like black licorice. Maybe leave a comment. We can have a little survey. How many people like black licorice? Leave your opinions in the comment section.
Next up is, what is your favorite drawing / animation that you've done? Whenever I finish a new project or drawing, I always think, I did a good job. I'm proud of it. It's my new favorite. And then eventually I start looking at it and I see flaws and I see things that I don't like about it anymore. I'm like, no, I have to make something that's better. I'm better than this. And then it's not my favorite anymore. And I always feel like I need to improve and there's something that I can do better. And I know that there is, but there's just a part of me that just, so I never really have a favorite. I always just have this urge to make something better. It's something that I'm working on. I need to definitely start being proud of my work more, but one animation that I'm working on right now, it's coming out actually pretty good. I think it's really funny and you guys are really gonna like it. So maybe that one will be my favorite, but who knows?
Those are all the questions that I'm going to be answering for this video. So, thank you to everyone who suggested a question or a drawing. If you want to be part of one of these, make sure you follow me on Twitter or DeviantArt, because those are the places that I announce when I'm taking questions and stuff. So, thank you guys for watching, and I will see you all later. Goodbye!
Welcome back to Random Thoughts! This time, part 2 edition. I want to talk about random things that cross my mind but can't stretch them into their own video, so I'm shambling them all together to make a weird video that's a whole caboodle of nonsense. If you haven't seen my first Random Thoughts video, you don't need to watch that one first to understand this one. Thinking about it, you could pretty much jump in at any point of either of these videos and you'll be fine, since it's nothing but a melting pot of balderdash. Thesource.com is giving me a rainbow of colorful words today. Poppycock. Are there limits to what you can call a fork? There's 3-pronged forks and 4-pronged forks. Can a knife be classified as a 1-pronged sharp fork? You use them both to stab things. Well, I guess knives are more slicing and cutting. Can a sword be classified as a 1-pronged super sharp fork? Those things were definitely both created to stab. Can a fork fall in the category of a tiny, really dull 4-pronged sword? Is there a spectrum of fork to knife to sword? Back in like the Renaissance era, what if rivals said, "Sir, I challenge you to a super sharp 1-pronged fork duel." Or even,
What if, sir, I challenge you to a dull, four-pronged, tiny sword duel? Oh no! He brought a less dull, tiny, one-pronged fork sword!
So you know, bananas, those yellow things? I don't know about your life, but I always grew up not eating any bruises on bananas. There's nothing wrong with bruised bananas. They're the same as any normal, non-bruised banana. I think. I just did research, as in the first result on Google, and it says for bananas to ripen, they start to make a hormone called ethylene, which sounds like an ingredient in gasoline, but it's not. It's what turns bananas from their super gross green bitter phase to the softer, sweeter, and quite frankly, more superior yellow phase.
Yay, ethylene!
But apparently, ethylene doesn't know how to chill out, so even when a banana's at the perfect ripeness, the ethylene is like, no, I think we can keep going. I think we can be even more ripe. What's the worst that can happen? So the banana just tries to infinitely get more ripe, which is what eventually turns it mushy and brown.
No, ethylene.
And isn't that just a metaphor for life? You can't endlessly chase the image of banana perfection you have in your head, little banana. You should try to stop and appreciate the ripeness you're at every once in a while. Or else you'll keep working towards something unachievable and get all mushy. Banana body positivity. Unless you're a green banana, then I hate you. So the dark spots are basically just the banana starting to get too ripe, which means they're harmless. But they used to freak me out a lot, so I'd have to cut them off or something to be able to enjoy the rest of the banana. And then I started thinking, what if there was a banana monster that ate humans? Would they want to eat the bruises on humans? Ah, splits. This one has a bruise on it. You know those parts are still edible, right? I don't like them. I think they taste gross. Here, you can just cut off the bruises. It's fine. Let me just use this one-pronged fork of mine and... This started off all sciencey and informational, and then I think I ruined it. Since you brought up the topic of bananas, I was at a store checkout line one time and this guy got in queue behind me. I didn't think anything of it until I saw this river of bananas scroll up to the register. Imagine, so you know how grocery stores have their bananas on display, and underneath the display sometimes there's more boxes of bananas? He had like four of those banana boxes, all laid out on the conveyor belt. I've never seen anyone buy that many bananas before. You know you have to eat all those in a certain amount of time, right? With the ethylene and all that? Is this your first time buying bananas? I looked up to see who this hero of a man was, and we made eye contact, and I didn't know what to do, but I felt like I had to say something because I was so proud of him, so I just went, yeah, bananas are my favorite too. What are fish's opinions on water currents? Do you think they think they're annoying? Welcome home, fish dear. How was your day at the office? Ah, fishwife. The currents were pretty strong today. I was swimming to fish work, and the currents swished all my fish papers out of my fish hands. I mean fins, so I was late. Our fish neighbor, Benjafish, crashed into me on my way as well. Currents were too strong for his feeble fish body. You know him in his old fish age. Oh, fish frick. Fishwife, there's no need to use that type of fish link. This is stupid. But are strong water currents for fish the equivalent to, like, strong wind for us? Wind is my least favorite weather. People with long hair can understand. Or do you think they're more like fun amusement park rides? Or at least, slides. Like in Nemo when they were with the high turtle? That seemed like fun. I can imagine a fish charging fish money to let other fish go down the river stream or a little waterfall. Fun for the entire fish family. Fishny world. But then I remember those clips of salmon trying to swim upstream against the water to go have babies, and that whole ordeal just seems like an inconvenience. Especially because... bears. Oh, fish frick. Are we all just brains wearing human meat suits? Let's pretend there's a fountain of youth somewhere. Let's pretend that's a real thing. Do you think that if you sat in it too long that your fingers would get wrinkly? Ha! Get it? Because water makes your hands... Do you think if you sit in it for too long, you'll eventually just turn into your mom and dad because before you became a human baby, that's how you originated? If you wait even longer, do you become your grandparents? Can you keep going until there's several medieval villages of ancestors sitting in this fountain? Can we reach amoeba phases? RNA in the primordial soup? The universe itself! I talked about keeping a little list of these random thoughts as I think about them over time in part one, and this point just says... Why are bugs always pregnant? With no other context. So,
I don't know what to talk about here or what past Jaden was even thinking when she wrote that. As a kid, I would daydream a lot. In fourth grade, sometimes I would make up this scenario in my head where I would be in school like any normal day, and in the middle of class, I would magically be turned into a dog. Stay with me here. I'm not a furry. So I was transformed into a dog somehow, and I imagined that I'd get up from my desk, walk up to the teacher, and say, "Can I go home? I'm a dog." And that would be my excuse to get out of school. Haha, smell you later. So what's it like to be a normal kid? I feel like the majority of people would just try to pretend they're sick or something. Me? Nah, being turned into a dog would be the most logical and easiest way to get out of school. I didn't even have a follow-up plan for after I got out of class. I'd go home, and then what? Just be a dog for the rest of my life? Obviously, I had to be a dog that talked, so maybe I would have became a super famous talking dog. But scientists might want to take me away and run tests on me and my weird human dog brain. All I wanted to do was get out of class! I'd probably end up daydreaming about turning back into a human to get out of dog experimental lab class. Or I could just pretend to be sick like a normal science experiment test subject. So a few videos ago, I talked about wanting to collect those 3 polka dolls, and guess what your girl did? I finally found them, and they're sitting on my desk, and they're my greatest achievement. I found a Sceptile a while ago, but like a week later, I found someone selling all 3 at the same time, and I was like, whoa, okay, here we go. At first, I asked if they could just sell me the Blaziken and Swampert, and they said no, and I was like, ugh, but I bought them anyway. So I have this extra Sceptile polka doll, and I decided to just give it to someone. So I'm gonna do a little fun game. If you want the Sceptile polka doll, just tweet me a funny reason why I should pick you to send it to, and the funniest tweet, or the tweet I like the best, will win. And do like, hashtag Jaden doll, so I can semi-organize everything. I'll choose the winner in like 3 days. Last time I asked you to tweet me stuff, Twitter was like, whoa, you're getting a crap ton of notifications. How about you chill for a bit? And I was like, no, Twitter, when I say I want pet pictures, I want to see the pet pictures. That was a really fun week. Also, one last thing real quick. There's new holiday Christmas merch in the shop if you dig that kind of stuff, and everything's gonna be 25% off for a while. So yeah, that's cool. Thanks for listening and can't wait to see my Twitter be a mess for another week. Bye.
Halloween is coming up, and I feel peer pressured by myself to make a Halloween-themed video, so that's what you're watching. But when I sat down to try and think of something to talk about, nothing really came to my mind. I don't have any crazy Halloween stories or over-the-top thoughts about it. It's kind of just a meh holiday for me. Then I realized, I have nothing to say about Halloween. So that's what this video is about. Reasons why I'm not the biggest fan of Halloween, but it's not like I don't like it. I'm just overall neutral about the whole thing. Please don't dislike this video. I always only hear about people either thinking, Halloween is the best holiday and anyone who doesn't think so can be sacrificed by goats. Or, Halloween is horrible and it's just an excuse to make dumb skeleton puns and worship Satan. And I'm neither of those. The most I'll really do is reference the Halloween spoopy meme an unhealthy amount of times because that's really my favorite thing about the whole season. That probably explains very well the extent of my Halloween enthusiasm. The thing is, I'm willing to give Halloween a chance. I just haven't had any great, amazing, spooktacular things happen when I celebrate Halloween. So to all you huge Halloween enthusiasts, I don't know, tell me how to be more spoopy. See, yeah, it's pretty bad. I decided to cover some main Halloween staples and explain, I guess, why Halloween doesn't stand out to me. So hooray, let's get ready for some transition slides. You think I'm popular and outgoing enough to even be invited to regular parties? Who do you think I am, an extrovert? The majority of the Halloween-themed parties I've been to are those neighborhood parties where all the adults get together with their kids and everyone's got mediocre costumes on, and nothing fun really happens. Just small talk and alcohol for the adults and hyperactive kids running around being brats. I never know what to do at parties, so I just follow my mom around like an idiot. Sometimes people would be like, oh, Jaden, you've gotten so big since the last time I saw you. How's school? Literally. I think that's the only thing adults know what to say to us. And I can understand, because when I try to put myself in their shoes and think about what I would try to say to a millennial, I wouldn't know what to talk about either. So, do you guys still dab? Just kidding, that meme has been brutally murdered. Last Halloween, though, all my friends wanted to go to some random Halloween party at some person's house I didn't know. And in my head, I was like,
But what if we just stayed here?
But I just went with it because, I don't know. I could have stayed at the dorms. They weren't forcing me or anything. I just already knew what was gonna happen. They're all gonna split up and I was gonna end up following one friend around like an idiot. And that's exactly what happened.
I don't understand how people can just go to a party where they don't know anyone. Like, they're not even technically invited. Their friend is going, so they just came along too. And they can leave being best friends with everyone and all of a sudden being in a relationship.
How? I can't even try to initiate a simple conversation with someone without overanalyzing the freak out of everything.
I should talk to someone. Wait, what's their personality like? Are they outgoing? Do they even like talking to new people at parties? What do I even say? I hate small talk. No, don't think about that. What's the best way to introduce myself? Should I be friendly or try to say something funny? What's their comedic preference? I don't know what makes them laugh. I don't even know them. I guess I'd know if I talk to them. What do I say after I say the first thing? I don't want to end up saying one thing and all of a sudden it's awkward tension. They seem annoyed. They probably hate me already.
I'm a weak person. Scary things are not my forte. The other night I scared myself by accidentally turning the bathroom fan on instead of the light. So you can guess that I don't regularly indulge in spooky movies by my own free will. But last year, my friends all decided to celebrate the Halloween season by watching a scary movie every single night of October leading up to Halloween. I guess. Every night, I was absolutely terrified because I thought I was about to be scarred for life. But after it ended, I was very underwhelmed and disappointed. It's completely based on the specific movies we watched. I know there's undeniably horrifying ones out there that would absolutely destroy me, but even a fragile leaf like me thought the ones that we watched were below par. One example was The Blair Witch Project, which we all know is a huge classic on the old horror movies list. If you haven't seen it, don't waste your time by skipping the video to not hear spoilers. A group of teens gets lost in the woods with their video camera while looking for something spooky. I can't remember what it was, but it's not really that important. They just needed to go into the forest. Then they get lost and wander around in the woods. Sometimes they'd find a pile of rocks and they'd think it's spooky, even though every 7-year-old who plays outside with rocks does that. The one guy goes conveniently insane for a minute and kicks their map into a river, and they get even more lost and wander around in the woods. Then I fell asleep for an hour. Then I woke up and they were still lost and wandering around in the woods. They find an old house and the end. I fell asleep for the majority of the movie and I didn't miss anything when I woke up. I know there's a new remake of it, and that's probably a little bit better, or at least I'd hope so. But I wasn't spooked at all considering all the hype around it. And yes, I know it's special because it's one of the first to do the found footage style horror movie film thing, but I mean, that still doesn't cover the fact that it was boring with failed tension. But I do like The Nightmare Before Christmas. That's a good Halloween movie. I asked on Twitter if you guys thought it was a Halloween or a Christmas movie, and it was way closer than I thought it was gonna be. Even though it's obviously a Halloween movie, people were still adamant about the fact that they thought it was Christmas. Now, it's okay to have an opinion, and not many people can change the way you view something, but to all you people who think it's a Christmas movie, you have to be willing to accept the fact that your opinion is actually wrong. It was originally released October 13th, 1993, closer to Halloween, and the director of the movie himself, Henry Selick, actually answered the question in an interview that it is indeed a Halloween movie. Cry me a river and scream all you want, I'm not attacking your opinion. You can see it as whatever you want. It can be St. Patrick's Day for all I care. Just be able to accept the fact that it is literally canon that it's an official Halloween movie. There's enough Christmas movies around anyway, we don't need any more. Let Halloween have a turn, share a bit. I'm talking about the things like corn mazes or haunted houses. Going along the haunted houses topic, I haven't been in many, but they were all just awkward. It's kinda just a conveyor belt of people walking through a semi-decently decorated area with other people in costumes yelling and groaning at them. Like, it's kinda just courtesy to go, ah, when they come at you, because otherwise it's kinda weird not to do anything else. I'm sure there's really awesome, well-executed ones out there. I'm very willing to accept that fact. But I just don't think that it's worth spending $20 to go out and do. Just my opinion. No harm if you enjoy it. Again, this video is my general neutral view. It's not that I don't like them, I just haven't been to any that amaze me. Of course, how could I not talk about the biggest part of Halloween? Trick-or-treating. Jaden, are you saying you don't like going out with friends in costumes and getting candy?
I don't know, it's not like I didn't like it. I always went out and did it, but I was never really super enthusiastic about it.
And save your gas, but I'm not the biggest fan of candy either.
It's a good treat, don't get me wrong, but I can't handle too much of it.
My costumes growing up weren't really the best. I mean, not really the worst either. One of the only costumes I even remember is when I was younger. I was obsessed with the Powerpuff Girls, and I wanted to be Bubbles because she was my favorite. So my mom ordered a Bubbles costume online, and when it arrived, the wig wasn't even a wig. It was this huge cutout foam hat thing. The eyes were these huge dumb glasses that were bigger than my head. The dress was the same fabric as the hair, and it just draped over my entire body like a curtain. It looked ridiculous, but little Jaden at the time thought it was the frickin' bomb. Like, I became Bubbles. The powers were literally bestowed upon me via the tacky $15 costume. I think that was my favorite costume in my trick-or-treating years. So, yeah. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing.
Hey, so, you're about to hear a side of me that not a lot of people hear or see. So I was editing the video, and I realized that I forgot to record an end card. And it's 5:45 a.m. in the morning, so I'm kind of, this is what I have to do. You just gotta do it. I can't not just have no end card, so I gotta say something. This is a mistake. I'm gonna wake up and post the video and listen back and be like, what in the world? So yeah, I'm not conscious right now, so pardon me. This end card sucks. You know what? You win some and you lose some with your end cards. You know, they can't all be good. What do you expect from me? Do you want perfect end cards? Because that's not what you're gonna get. How long have I been talking for? Is this good? Yeah, I'm gonna finish editing. So, I love you. Good night.
Some of you may have heard, but a while back, Jacob and their team created a little something called Pokemon Too Many Types. It's just a normal game of Pokemon Emerald, but you might notice some things are just a little bit different. Everyone has talked about how chaotically fun this game is, and I finally found the time to play it myself. Let me tell you, everyone was right. This was the most insane, backwards, chaotic playthrough of Pokemon I've had in quite some time. Professor Birch is being mauled by a dog in the grass right outside my house for the millionth time, and after digging around in his stuff, I helped myself to a Popplio. But not just any Popplio, for you see, this one is silly. Obviously, I blast the Angiepoochiana to smithereens, and with that, have now earned the freedom to explore the world on my own. Yep, it's dawning on me that I have no idea how anything works anymore. Trainers had all these new Pokemon, they're pulling out moves I've never seen before, types don't line up the way I'm familiar with. It genuinely felt like I was playing Pokemon for the very first time again. Weasel is water fluffy, Snom is ice beam.